If you ask me what I came to do in this world, I, an artist, will answer you. I am here to live out loud. Hello, my friend. Welcome to another episode of Making Comics Gutter Talk. My name is Adam Greenfield. I am your forever host. We got a great, great episode today. We're going to talk with Daniel Warren Johnson, just an awesome, awesome artist. Before we get into that, though, that quote you just heard was Emile Zola. He was a French writer from the late 19th century. And he was kind of controversial of the time, but these days he probably wouldn't be so controversial. Quite honestly, I don't know much about his writing, but I have read a few of his quotes, and I dig it. So if you get a chance, check him out. By the way, the picture that I saw of him actually looks like some hipster dude in San Diego, so I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway, moving on. If you have your own quote that helps you create or inspires you to create or just one that you really are a fan of, we want to hear about it. So go ahead and take that quote and illustrate it out. You're the artist, right? Draw it out. So we want to see that. Take your quote, illustrate it, send it over to me at ag@makingcomics.com. I will make sure I make a note of it here in the podcast, give you all some props. I received one. I put out this request last week, and I received an awesome one from one of a very good supporter of ours, Victoria Coldwin. I really hope I'm pronouncing that last name right, so if I'm not, please correct me. But anyway, she sent me one that was amazing. It's that little quote that I say at the end of every podcast, but she took it out and created a little banner for me, and it's got myself drawn out, and it's got Daffy Duck in the middle, and right on the right is my cat Stella. So I love it. So we want to see stuff like that. So send it over. We want to see it. All right. So, you know, let's kind of get into this one. This is, again, Daniel Warren Johnson. Just an amazing artist. He's got his own stuff at danielwarrenart.com, danielwarrenart.com. Go ahead and check it out. Just some amazing stuff over there. If you want to check out a story he's working on, go to spacemullet.com. That's space-mullet.com. I'm about two chapters in, and I could not. I actually had to force myself to stop reading because I was at work, and my boss, if you're listening to this, you didn't hear that. But it was really good. So if I had kept reading, I would have not gotten any work done. So if you get a chance, check out space-mullet.com. Fantastic story. So let's get into it because I want to know how he did it. Daniel Warren Johnson.
Cats and doors don't mix, so. all right. Okay, so I guess we'll go ahead and get started. We are sitting down with Daniel Warren Johnson. Do you prefer Daniel, Dan?
The only reason I do Daniel Warren Johnson is because it's the only way to find me on Google. If you Google Dan Johnson, you get like a Marine,
right.
A comedian, and another concept artist. And for conversational, you can call me Dan.
Dan, okay, cool. I've got a friend whose name is Ryan Smith, so I totally get it. We're also joined by Mark Litke. I think everybody should know who Mark Litke is by now. He is the head of development for MakingComics.com. How you doing, Mark?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Good. All right, so are you from Chicago? Have you been there your whole life, born and raised?
No, I grew up in Massachusetts, a little bit west of Boston. And I came out to Chicago for college. I went to North Park University on the north side because the tuition was so low out in Chicago. So I changed location because it was more affordable.
Couldn't get away from the cold, huh?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, I knew I didn't want to go to the south even then because it's too hot. You know?
I remember Chicago being a little more average when I lived out there in Naperville. I moved out from Maryland, so I also went from the East Coast to the Midwest.
Okay.
So I got an idea of how that was, but yeah. So did you growing up in Massachusetts, did you get a lot of, what were your first comic introductions? How did you get into this? Or even art, in general?
Oh, gosh. As far as comics, I remember I wasn't reading comics until I could actually read. I remember that. But Power Rangers was like the first media thing that ever entered into my life when I realized that it was more than just picture books.
Right.
So I started drawing like Power Rangers in first grade, and that's when I knew that I wanted to draw. But I didn't find comics until I started reading Calvin and Hobbes when I was like in third or fourth grade, maybe.
I don't think I've met a comic artist yet who didn't start with Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah, that's what I'm finding more and more. And I was just, like, laughing. I was, like, on my way to the comic book store today, and I was just thinking about Calvin and Hobbes. And they keep referring to the noodle incident in Calvin and Hobbes, you know, and it still makes me laugh to this day. It still does, and I'm like, that is the way you can gauge your success when you have a comic that is, you know, hasn't even been commercialized, and it still makes you laugh right in the middle of a cold day.
My favorite was when he was doing the snowball, the snowman.
Yes.
You know, all of those.
I so. Like the duplicator. That was my favorite.
Yes.
That was such a great story arc. My son is going through all the Calvin and Hobbes right now.
Okay.
I got the big collection, and he's been plowing through those, which is pretty awesome to see.
I feel like it's kind of like a coming-of-age thing in America for, like, a boy or girl to both genders, you know, to read through the Calvin and Hobbes books, you know.
Yes. So when did you just, you know, kind of get into creating? Like, what was your first influence on that? And I also like, by the way, how we were talking Calvin and Hobbes and we got Mark's cat going, but
yeah, sorry about that. This cat's very pushy tonight.
That's all right. That's all right.
No, that's okay. So the question was like, sorry.
What was your first inclination to create art as opposed to just consume it?
Well, I wasn't a very popular kid in school. I remember in first and second grade. I mean, I know popular doesn't really... Well, I guess, you know, in its own little small world, you know, kind of being on the outskirts of what is considered cool in first and second grade.
Sure.
But the only way that I had any sort of staying power as far as, like, being cool in school was drawing. So it was... And I could do it better than any of the other kids in school, so I used that as, like, a level up, you know, kind of...
Right. I think that, along with Calvin and Hobbes, seems to be another common path.
Yeah. Well, I just remember my teacher would hand me a math test, and I'd be like, oh, thank you. And I'd turn the line where your name is supposed to be into a truck in the bottom of a flatbed.
Right.
So I started there, and then from then on, it just I just did it for fun. I was always drawing, always.
So what, did you get into any kind of art education prior to college at all, or was that really get into that didn't really happen until college years?
Well, I was so after second grade, I was homeschooled from third grade to 12th grade, and that made that gave me enough time to be classically trained in like fine art from middle school to the end of high school. So I had a private tutor from 7th grade to 12th grade. And I did figure drawing and sculpting and painting and, you know, a lot of, mostly figure drawing, but all classically trained. So,
Now you mentioned, we were talking a little bit earlier, you mentioned that you're a Christian.
Yeah.
So how has that influenced your art or even your career path, as Mark also asked?
You know, it's interesting. When I first, well, like, because, you know, you kind of have to decide what you have to do when you go to college. And I really had no idea. I was thinking about possibly being, like, a youth pastor, but, you know, and then, but I knew I wanted to do art, and then, you know, like, well, I'm a Christian. I should do something with my life that is honoring to, you know, to the Lord and things like that. I don't mean to get super Christianese or anything. This is just what was going on through my mind. And I graduated, and I had no idea what to do. I graduated with a degree in art education, and I actually ended up teaching for a year at a middle school, and it was a really bad experience in, like, Chicago, urban Chicago.
Okay.
And I wasn't really using my gift of art, I felt, in any sense of the word. So I believe that God has given me a gift. And I need to share that gift with other people, and not just by creating comics, but like before I became a teacher for 2 years, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was like, I don't really want to teach. I don't want to, like, work hard at art. I just kind of want to be. So I got a job in Chicago as, like, a hospital transporter.
Wow.
So I pushed like people around a hospital all day. So from their rooms to like surgery, or from emergency room to CAT scan. And I was like, you know, minimum wage, working with a bunch of people who, you know, did drugs and swore a lot. And it's not something I really had experienced before. And I had to figure out how my faith worked in a place where I was working, where, you know, it's not about like going into a work environment or going into an artistic endeavor with possibly like another creator and thinking, well, how am I going to bring Jesus to this person's life, you know, or anything like that. Just trying to exist with people and care for people while being with them and supporting them, while also making art that is reflective of that. So I don't know what that looks like. It's not me making comics about Jesus, you know, or drawing crosses or anything like that. But I want my art to reflect some sort of redemption, something that somebody can pull out of it and feel and can see that it's real. And it comes from an honest place, which I believe that my faith kind of inspires.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to actually ask you about one of your pieces. The
Hit me.
It's an album art for Sama Dams. Is that how you pronounce it?
Sama Dams, yeah. The guy's name is Sam Adams, but his band name is Sama Dams.
Nice. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this one. And after this, we can definitely jump into your style, because I want to know exactly how you did this one. But what was the concept? This seems, I don't know, there's some calmness to it, but at the same time, it seems a bit like there's a little more to it.
A lot of the stuff that is on my website is very personal, that I came up with myself, that had no input from anybody else.
Okay.
But this was definitely more of a case of Sam came to me, and they're awesome. Their music is great. You can find them on Spotify, actually, so you should check them out.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, but they came to me with this idea, and they just had like this little, you know, sketch, this quick little sketch they had done on like a napkin or something. And they asked me to just build on it, and I did. And so if you find a sense of peace in it, I think that's awesome. That's great. I definitely, I took like an old ratty Sumi brush, and I dipped it in brown watercolor for that background. And I really ground it into the paper. And so the original, the paper is all like mucked up. It's like, it's very ratty. You know, when you put too much water on paper, mm-hmm. it starts coming apart. And so I really like the effect that it gave. And also kind of gave it a sense of, if we're going to get artsy-fartsy, gave it a sense
of... Let's do it.
Yeah, gave it a sense of like, unease? Insert good word there.
yeah.
Mostly I was just trying to make it look cool.
I like the texture of it. And Mark and I were talking before you jumped on. We were taking a look at it, looking at the streaks. But most of all, we were actually looking at the white in the, I guess, the flower.
Yeah, we were wondering if that was paper showing through, or if you had gone back over that with a white opaque watercolor or something. I'm just curious how you got that effect.
You know, that would have been a great idea. That's a great idea to go back in with a white, opaque white. But I distinctly remember that I painted around every single one. Wow. So that's the paper.
Well, it looks great. I think that was probably the better choice, because you've got these beautiful textures underneath that wouldn't have come through if you just painted right over it. I mean, it looks really nice.
Thank you, man. Definitely. Appreciate it. I spent a lot of time on that one.
How did you get into this kind of style, though? And I guess, how would you define your style?
Well, when I was in college, I needed to figure out how to make my line drawing sexier.
Okay.
My professor at the time wanted me to add more color. And so I really loved my black and white stuff, but I didn't want to ruin any of the line art. So I found that watercolor was great, because you can do washes over the black and white line art without, depending on what kind of ink you use, you don't have to worry about it running. And it was so that was kind of life-changing. And I actually ended up watercoloring my senior project in college, and it was 15 feet long by 1.5 feet tall, So it went all along the wall, and it was 15 feet long, and it was my entire college experience from the left to the right, and it read like a comic, and I watercolored
it. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's too big for me to put it online, but I'm still very proud of it. So whenever I need to watercolor something that I want to look more interesting than just like flats in Photoshop, I'll watercolor it. So that's kind of how I came to that.
The line work that you have, it's like really, really loose. And when I first started working with line work, everything had to be like super perfect. And I found that when I finally loosened up, that's when like my art started to, you know, breathe a little bit more. And like your stuff is just really rich and alive because of that. Like, how did you get to that loose state that you found?
Thanks, man. Mostly it's because I'm lazy. I mean, I wish that I could say, because I mean, I'm always trying to be more patient with my work. I've always been kind of ADD about it since I've ever been drawing. It's like, okay, I need to move on to the next thing. But I found that if I take my time with something, if I really take my time, I can make it look very clean. But it's painful for me. So I have a tendency to rush more than I should. And because of that, I've kind of learned how to make things look as good as I can while also doing things quite fast. It happens with anybody, you know, and some people are great at it, but the tighter you are, the more uniform your lines are, at least in my opinion, you kind of deaden the feel of whatever you're trying to capture. I'm very loose with like action scenes, and I try and keep things very loose. And then, you know, if there are people talking in a living room, I'll make sure to try and be a little bit more cleaner. Because it's slow, because, you know, when things are going fast, you want your lines to be fast, and when things are going slow, you want your lines to be more tight. So I try and adjust accordingly. Working fast a lot of the time, I kind of learned what works and what doesn't.
I'm looking at the Merry Christmas from the Krampus picture that you've
got. Oh, yeah.
I was curious if you could just talk about kind of the tools that you use and the techniques to go through it, because visually it looks like, you know, you've got some like really thick brushwork in here and maybe going in digitally afterwards and possibly some like microns or something. I'm just wondering what you're actually using to do this.
It's all traditional except for the colors and mm-hmm. For most of my inking, for that one, I remember it was it's like a Winsor Newton brush. Series 7, and it drives me crazy because Winsor Newton, their brushes are not, they don't make each brush to the same quality standard.
Mm-hmm.
So you might find one brush that'll be good for a week and it'll poop out, whereas the brush next to it would be good for, you know, 2 years, which drives me nuts. Anyway, So using that with just traditional ink, and I'm sure there are some parts there where I'm using microns. Go ahead.
For example, like the horn, the white lines that you have here, did you go back over that with like a whiteout pen, or were you just really careful with making those?
Again, like with the fast stuff, I kind of like whip out whatever's closest to me and I, you know, scribble on it. But I'm almost positive that's a whiteout pen on the horns. I have like a little gel pen that I get on Jet Pens. I forget what it's called. It's like Signo, like gel white. White gel pen, and the flow is really nice, so I can white out stuff really quickly with a pen rather than pulling out my white out.
I'm gonna have to take notes on that. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, do it, dude.
I was looking through a lot of these comics that you have on here. Are you doing all the writing for those too? Are you like a one man shop, or are you working with other people on those?
For all the comics that you see on my website and all of the Space Mullet, that's all me. I'm a one-man band when it comes to comics. At least I have been for the past 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've found that, because I've had a lot of people who have asked me to collaborate and asked, you know, hey, do you want to write my story? And I try to be as gracious as possible, but unless they can pay me, you know, it's too much work for me to illustrate somebody else's vision. Not when I have so many things in my head. And one thing I've figured out about comics is it's the most amount of work for the littlest amount of production. You know, what you get back, it's the most amount of work for as little as you get back, which doesn't make it a bad thing. It's awesome still, but I just need to pick my projects carefully. So they've all been mine and all my stories. So.
And you seem to be chapters ahead. Well, not chapters ahead, but pages ahead, correct?
Yes. In Space Moment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I noticed that there are two updates a week, but being pages ahead, does that kind of take the pressure off and allows you to be a little less loose or a little more tight or clean with it? Or do you feel that you're still going at the same pace no matter what?
Depends on the day. It really doesn't matter if I'm 4 months ahead or 4 hours ahead. Some days will just be great and every line works the way I want it to. And some days I'll be going really slow and taking my time and nothing's coming out right. So I work better when I am under a crunch, when I'm under a deadline, when I need to get it done. I work better. So if the page is supposed to go up in like 2 hours, the work will probably be better than if I did it 2 months ahead of time. So that's great for deadlines, but it's bad for working ahead. So, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, in the sense of things, you know, if I'm ahead, I'm ahead. And now I have a gig with Dark Horse, a 12-issue series with Dark Horse that I'm working on.
Oh, cool.
And that leaves very little time for Space Mullet. So a lot of it has been kind of getting it done at the last minute. So I'm working on building up my library again, so I don't need to worry about it as much. And make it more of a weekend thing, because I don't get paid for Space Mullet, and it's hard sometimes to enter in the mentality of creating a professional, a thing that looks professional, but I'm not getting paid money to do it. Because passion projects, you know, they have a tendency to bleed you dry if you're not careful, I've found.
Yeah, you've got to be careful with hobbies that are also your work.
Yes.
You've got to balance them right, or else it can get troublesome.
It's really true. And it'd be different, you know, if I had, like, a job at, like, you know, I don't know, as a teacher or Whole Foods or et cetera, you know. And then you come home and you work on comics, which is something that's kind of like an escape. But when comics are your full-time job, and I love it, I'm so happy to be doing comics full-time. It takes a sense of it. You need some balance. Like I start at 9 and I end at 6:30 every day. Like no matter what. Like unless I have a deadline that really needs to get done, I stop at 6:30. I spend time with my wife, you know, and then I do something else that's not comics to kind of not burn myself out.
How hard was it to develop that schedule that you were just talking about?
It was really hard because I used to be a night owl when it came to work, and then I got married, and my wife was, it's pretty personal actually, like just the reason why, but like she was upset, you know, she'd come home from work and I'd still be working, because I'd start at like noon and I'd go till midnight, mm-hmm. and we wouldn't really hang out, and she started getting really upset, and so I agreed to change the schedule. I started working during the day so that when she got home from work, I would be done with work. And it was really hard. I got married like 2 years ago, and marriage is really hard. It's awesome, but it's also like, it's a huge, I mean, like I knew it wasn't going to be a cakewalk, but there's some days where you're just like, oh my gosh, oh, I can't work until midnight because my wife is like upset about something and we need to talk about bills, you know.
Honey, aren't you tired yet?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're like, oh, go to bed. I'm going to finish working. And then, like, an hour later, she'll come up and be like, hey, are you coming to bed soon? I'm like, oh, I need to finish this panel. But it's good because then I, you know, it stretches me, you know, and I don't just become this, like, crusty artist, you know. I'm forced to change and adapt, and changing my schedule was one of the ways that I had to do that.
And it keeps you on track.
Yes. You know, it's good. It's like kind of lights a fire under my butt when I know that my wife's going to be home in an hour and I haven't done as much as I should have, you know?
Shouldn't have taken that executive lunch.
Yeah. Well, there's some like, and it's all with grace too, you know. Like, oh, I have bad days just like anybody else. And my wife will come home. She's like, "Hey, what'd you get done today?" And I'd be like, "Babe, oh, there was this one panel. Just let me tell you, and it was just tearing my guts out." And she's like, "I hear you. I hear you." And I'm like, "I gotta work a little bit tonight." She's like, "That's okay." And it's a give and take, you know. As I'm sure you said, you have kids. Is that right,
Mark? Yeah, I have a son.
Yeah. All right.
And I am married.
Okay, so you know.
We all live in the same house with too many animals, and it's ridiculous. But yeah, that balance has always been a struggle, and I'm always curious to hear how other people experience and handle that. And so it's really interesting to hear from you how you're dealing with the same
struggles. There's a lot of tears and agony, but a lot of endearing qualities as well. Again, you know, I don't have anything figured out, really, no more than anybody else does. I just draw blood splatters pretty well. Is basically it.
You draw them very well, actually.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah, that's pretty well. That's more than just pretty well.
I actually had a guy, he asked me, he's like, how do you wrestle with being a Christian while also, you know, drawing violence like that? And I really had to think about it. I was like, whoa, oh my gosh. And I was like, turn the other cheek, shoot. You know, it challenged me, so it's something that I'm thinking about.
Do you find that kind of stuff helps solidify your beliefs?
Well, I guess I should preface by saying that just because I'm a Christian in comics doesn't mean, like, I won't draw a sex scene or something like that. It's kind of like one of the biggest problems that I have with people if I'm, like, having a beer with somebody and we're talking about God or whatever, and they take a magnifying glass to something that's in the Bible, and, you know, like, okay, in this part of the Bible, this guy cuts up this prostitute and he ships him off to the 12 tribes of Israel. What the hell is that all about? And it's terrible, and, like, you're looking at all these parts, and, like, the flood, and, like, all, and, like, this gets destroyed, and that gets destroyed, and it's all these magnifying glasses, and you're not, it's like, and those things are concerns, and I struggle with them every day with my faith as well. But one way that I reconcile that is that you need to kind of helicopter out from the magnifying glass parts of the story and look at the whole narrative of Scripture, and again, very Christianese. But then at the same time, I don't want to do that with scenes of a comic that I might be uncomfortable drawing with. So a sex scene or a scene of violence or something like that, like I can't, when looking at a script of whether I want to draw it or not, that's not, like, which I didn't write, I have to kind of helicopter out of it and see what the storyline is and what that scene or something that I might be uncomfortable drawing with, how does that fit into the overall narrative of this story, of this comic that I'd be illustrating? Mm-hmm. And is the whole narrative something that I'm comfortable with? Is it honest? Is it real? You know, I may be saying something at the end that I don't agree with, but is it presented in a way that's respectful? And then figuring out where those pieces are of the puzzle of that story and figuring out, does this make sense within the context of the narrative? Like, for instance, there's a very violent race that happens in Space Mullet in my comic. And it's very tongue-in-cheek for the first few laps. It's like kind of like a roller derby with like baseball bats.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they're going around the track, and people are like getting hit and being punched, and there's blood everywhere. And it's very like it's fun, and it's like engaging, and it's just ridiculous. But then I have I have one of the racers get murdered on the track, and it kind of like pulls you out of the violence, and like you're like, oh, wait a minute, what am I actually reading here? So I'm kind of like, it's almost like I'm kind of wink wink at my audience. At least that's what I'm trying to do, and it may not work, but I don't know. It's a tough question. Violence, sex, you know, there's so many shades of gray. It's not black and white.
You know, my father is a minister, and he looked at a drawing that I did a number of years ago, and it was really inappropriate. It was just out of a sketchbook. And he looked at it, and he's like, why do you draw these things? And at the time, I didn't really have a good answer. But I think now, you know, from a Christian perspective, you may not agree with a lot of the things that happen in this world, but you live in this world.
Yeah.
And from a storyteller's perspective, I don't think you can tell stories honestly if you edit reality and edit the world around you. And so I think, you know, I appreciate your approach of, you know, I may not, from, you know, a faith perspective, agree with all of the things that happen in my comic or all of the things that happen in comics that I make for other people. But at the same time, I mean, it's things that happen in the world and you're shedding a light on them and you can shed that light, you know, from your perspective. Everything that you do comes through you, and I think it's valid, and we shouldn't shy away from those things, even if they don't necessarily jive with our worldview, if that makes sense.
No, well said, man. Well said.
I feel like kind of like one of the reasons that God gave me this gift is to shed light on the terrible things that happen in the world in a way that does not negate it or doesn't say, oh, it's okay, or it's not that big of a deal, nothing like that, but rather it provides, it might say, I want my art, and this is a very high thing that I want my art to do, which I doubt it does. I want my art to prove to the things that happen in this world that life is still worth living. It's very idealistic and heady, but like I never want to write a story like the Game of Thrones, you know, like I love reading it, but there's no sense of right and wrong, and everybody's kind of bad, and there's these terrible things that happen to these characters, but at the end of the book, I'm like, man, I really don't, I'm like, I'm not happier that I finished that book. Like, I know that I've been to a good movie, or I've read a good comic, or I've read a good book, when I close the book, and I can say, like, I am so glad that I was alive to, like, consume that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, I'm so glad that, like, God forbid, that I didn't die or that I didn't commit suicide, because then I wouldn't have been able to see this and I wouldn't have experienced it and it wouldn't call out the things that are in my own life. And so anyway,
I went on tour with the Grateful Dead for a little while, so okay. With Jerry Garcia, so I personally completely understand that aspect of being alive to see something like that. So yeah, so I absolutely 100% understand that that desire to experience it, good or bad. I mean, you get something out of it no matter what. I'm not a religious person, but I also agree that you kind of have to zoom out and read between the lines. I was raised in Judaism. And there, and my father's Orthodox, and there were many things that I disagreed with, but as I've gotten older, I've realized that there are other things, there are other aspects about that, and even other religions, that if you just kind of zoom out and look at the overall picture, there's at least a balance, and you have to experience that.
So. Yeah, and I've had a lot of people say, you know, well, you're a Christian, so that must mean that you think my religion is wrong, and my response to that has always kind of been, I think that what we consider to be God is in a lot more of all sorts of different religions than a lot of people think, you know. Because I can see God working in so many different people's lives that don't call themselves Christians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just see redemptive work. I see redemptive qualities in all sorts of comics and movies that, you know, have no sort of ties to Christianity or anything like that. So, I don't know. That's what I tell people, and then they look at me like I've got another head sticking out of my neck.
It's a difference that we all can and should learn from.
Totally.
So I have no problem with stuff like that. And I'd be kind of curious if you ever did start to add that stuff to your work and what would come out of that. I would definitely be curious of that. Have you ever considered that at all?
You know, I've thought about doing some more, because all of the work that I put out for people to see, like Space Mullet, and I have a 5-page backup coming out in Brandon Graham's Prophet comic in March. And it's all been science fiction, like no sort of real stuff. And I've been thinking about doing a book kind of like, which is a little bit more like autobiographical. But it's still, though, it's And I'd like to include my faith in that, but it's a fine line because including faith, like, explicitly in any sort of narrative, whether it be book, movie, comic, it has a tendency to kind of hit people over the head even though you don't mean it to. And I want to be very careful about that. And not like, you know, I would ever make a book that would be marketed towards a Christian audience explicitly, but people have, you know, I've noticed things about comic readers, and they are very smart, and they can sniff things out, and they can tell when I'm trying to tell them something, and it requires a subtle hand, and I'm sounding like I'm trying to be ninja. I'm not, you know, I want to first provide people with a good story that, as I said, you know, they close Space Mullet, and they're like, man, I'm glad I was alive to consume that, you know, and then kind of take it to the next step, wherever that may be. What else is his work? You know, I wonder what this guy's worldview is, you know. Not like that's like my plan, but I'd rather do that than create a book that talking about my faith. Not to say that it can't be done well, like Craig Thompson's Blankets. He talks about how he lost his faith, and it's really powerful. I guess I don't feel like I'm a good enough writer to make a story that is honest, that doesn't, like, you know, boom, 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 hey, I'm a Christian, boom, 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 you should be a Christian too, boom, boom, you know. Okay. Anyway, who knows, you know, maybe someday I'll figure something out. Never say never.
I mean, I'm looking through this stuff, it's really, really spectacular.
Yeah, there was a certain page early on, and I'm only middle of the second chapter of Space Mullet.
Oh, well, hey, that's still a lot of, thanks for taking the time with it.
Well, I started it at work, okay. and then found myself ignoring work, so I had to stop.
Dude, you just made my day. Thank you.
No problem. Yeah, I had to stop. I had to look around and be like, okay, no one's looking. Anyway, so there was one page that you just did it was a full page panel.
Okay.
Early on, it was like page 18, I want to say, but that was the only one so far. What kind of drove you to do that? And what was the inspiration for, in the middle of a chapter, doing a full panel?
Basically, so I did, like, I wanted to do a webcomic because I wanted to kind of get into comics and make my own story and science fiction and just have fun with it and not have any sort of limitations on it, like, whatsoever. That page you're talking about, I was on vacation in Maine and I didn't cut my paper down before I had left from Chicago. And so I had this, like, it was exactly double what my normal page would be. And I was like, well, you know, there's going to be an expansive, like, kind of scene on here. Why don't I just make it into, like, a two-page spread? And so I spent half of my vacation drawing out that, you know, on the beach, just, like, drawing out that city scene. And I did it just because I could. And I wanted to, like, if I want to have two characters talking about life in a bar for 10 pages, I could do it, because no, I don't have an editor. There's nobody peeking over my shoulder saying, you know, we should probably move the story along.
Right, nothing to see here.
Yeah, well, nothing to see here, you know. So it was basically me just taking a chance and just having fun and realizing how hard it is to draw slums.
There's some crazy detail in this.
Oh. Yeah, coming back to kind of process and how you work on Space Mullet,
hit me, bro.
How do you approach this? And do you have the whole story, like, beginning to end worked out, or is it all kind of just as you go along? Beyond, like, ink on the paper, like, what's your...
Yeah.
How's it all coming together for you?
It's interesting, you know, I think the hardest part of making a comic for anybody, and I could be wrong, but for me at least, is sitting down at the computer or the sketchbook and trying to create something from nothing. So the first chapter, I knew that I needed to have a conflict and character motivations. And I basically, what I did when I first started Space Mullet is I had my main character, Jonah, the guy with the mullet, I gave him a desire or like a motivation, and I kind of infused him with the personality that I knew would make him my character. And then I tried to use that, and I, like, just literally put him into a bunch of different scenarios that I thought would be interesting, and I kind of let that kind of carry my story forward. And from there, I kind of let my characters do the work and figure out what's going to keep people connected with my characters, what's going to keep them coming back to the comic in the first place when it's a long-form webcomic. And from there, when I know kind of what, very, very vaguely know what's going to happen in the story, I figure out, like, my keyframes. Like approaching a planet, you know, I know there needs to be a big thing of the planet. I know that there's going to be this battle at the end of the story here. I know that there's a character moment in this part, and I map out the important parts, almost kind of like islands in my story, and then I'm basically building bridges to each one of those islands, and that's what kind of forms my story. And then I'll write a script that's very loose, very, very loose, and then I take that script and I start making thumbnails and just build from there.
So everything up until the thumbnails is all just like written text. Is that correct, or is it kind of like a mix of visual and...
It's a lot of text, but text that wouldn't make anybody... It makes sense to anybody except me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't write full scripts because I'm like, I could just draw this. This is taking too much time. I just got to get the idea down.
Yeah.
And there's been multiple conversations that have been shortened, extended, or words have changed while I've been thumbnailing.
Mm-hmm. When you
sometimes
get to
I'll even change things that are on the page as I'm drawing it. I'm like, man, that doesn't feel right. Let's try it this way.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that. I find when I'm making comics a lot, going from the large thumbnails to the actual page, you had talked about like putting your characters in situations and then giving them control over things. I found that like loosening up with rendering can give the characters a little bit more control of even their appearance and thus how the story goes along. Because maybe just the reaction of one character will require a different response from another character. It'll still take the story in the same place, but it just doesn't work with whatever script I had in my mind.
That's awesome that you say that, you know. Because having a script is so important, you know, but at the same time it should not be this unbreakable thing. Like, it should flex depending on what the story calls for. And sometimes, you know, my painting teacher back in college, he was like, you never start a painting thinking it's going to turn out this way. You start a painting with the hope of one thing, and when it changes, you kind of just go with it. And if you fight it, you're going to want to shoot yourself. And it's the same thing with comics. Like, you know, in the thumbnailing stage, if something's not working in your script at transferring over to thumbnails, you know, you got to change it.
Yeah.
And you adjust.
I found that once I kind of got okay with that, that's now become the joy for me in making this stuff, because that I feel like I get that same experience of seeing the story come together that a reader might, because unexpected things are happening and I'm getting surprised from things. Do you find that happening with yourself when you're working on these?
Do you
ever just get surprised by the work that you're putting down? Like, is it changing in such a way?
I do a lot. In fact, at the end of I don't want to give anything away, but there's a big thing.
No spoilers. I'm still reading this.
I won't spoil anything, but there is a big moment that happens in chapter 2 that I completely came up with on the fly, and it literally changed every single thing that happens in chapter 3 and chapter 4.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's scary, because then you're like going out on this limb that you didn't plan for. But you read a comic book, or you read a comic, and you can tell when the author is fighting something. You can tell when the artist is not enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to like bring your readers down with you, not necessarily like emotionally down, but just like when there's too much sweat or tears on the page, the reader can sense it, and it hurts the work, and you don't want to do that. Even if it's not perfect, even if there's holes in the story, people are going to enjoy that more than something that I was just listening to the podcast where, Adam, I believe you were talking about writing a script like 100 times over. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, we're talking with Paola about that, yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, you don't want that. You want it to be organic.
So how do you break out of that when you find yourself feeling like you're dragging it down? What do you do to kind of snap out of that funk, I guess?
Well, there's a difference between a funk with like where like your process and like just trying to get things done, and a funk with where the story is going. I find that the most change happens for me in the thumbnails. So if something is not working in your thumbnails, like your comic thumbnails, it is not going to work when you bring it to the full page. Like, it's just not going to happen. So there will be times, and actually this happened, where I fell behind on Space Mullet on my schedule simply because I could not get the thumbnails the way I wanted them to. And there, it's like all the tears and all the sweat and all the bile and the self-loathing mostly can go into the thumbnails, which just kind of screens you from putting that into your final pages in your work. Because you want your pages, you know, to be something that's fun, and you just want it to flow. And even if it doesn't look perfect, you just kind of get it on the paper, and then you say, I know that this works because I've thumbnailed them out to perfection.
How detailed are your thumbnails?
With Space Mullet stuff, very loose, because nobody has to see it. When I do thumbnails, like doing thumbnails for Dark Horse, I have to be a little bit more uniform. I have to make sure that people know what's going on, so it just doesn't make sense up here.
What size are you thumbnailing at?
Depends on the paper I have. Usually, like, you know, like 4 by 2.5 inches. Not very big.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, not like I know what I'm talking about, but if I could offer any sort of advice, I'd say work. Comic artists, you know, when working on comics, work on the thumbnails first and put all your heart and soul into those, and you're going to be so happy when you start moving into those final pages because it's going to be so much better. You don't need to worry about it. And then as far as, like, being in a funk when creating actual pages, that kind of that's just tough. You just got to sweat through it and hope for the best.
I'm more of the writer than the artist, and I would hit a wall. I found that if I stopped and cleaned my apartment, while I was cleaning, I was thinking about that story.
Yep.
And that's what kind of broke through that wall, is just doing something else even though my mind was still on it.
You know, I recently heard about the nothing alternative, which I find really, really helpful.
It's
where you say, I've got, say, an hour every day from, I don't know, 5 in the morning to 6 in the morning before you get ready for work. And during that hour, I'm going to work on a comic. I'm going to sit down, I'm going to work on it. And all I can do is I can work on that comic or I can stare out the window. But I can't check my email, I can't read a book, I can't do anything else. I can either work on the comic or I can do nothing.
Okay.
And it really works, because you're either going to sit there bored forever, but usually I'll sit there for a couple minutes drinking my coffee and then the ideas start coming, and then you just get in the groove, and then I end up working, you know, way past the time when I'm late for work.
Oh, dude.
What are you going to do?
That's great advice. And Adam, your advice is also equally as awesome. I mean, literally, like, sitting on the couch and drinking a beer while not watching TV, not checking Twitter or email, thinking about nothing, going for a run. I walk to Dunkin' Donuts and I have conversations with the people who make my egg and cheeses sometimes, you know? It's just, like, getting... that's one thing, you know, that you guys have down pat, like, to be good at comics, you got to step away from comics. It really helps.
Yeah, I mean, you want to dive in and make sure that there's no extended break, so you don't lose that momentum. But at the same time, sometimes it takes a little stepping back for a second.
It does. Sometimes you know it takes. I find for me, like, sometimes it takes longer than what I'm comfortable with, but then when I give it room to breathe, and it's different for everybody, I come back fresh, and I'm ready to tackle it again. Like, whenever I'm in, my chapters are about 50 pages long, and when I hit about 50 pages, my chapters are about 50 pages long, when I hit page 25, I get into, like, a deep depression. And my wife's like, okay, come on, let's watch Frasier or something. Like, get out of your funk, you know, get away from the drawing table.
Right.
You've been drawing for like 12 hours. It's time to stop. Talk to me.
It's Same. I reach that funk whenever I finish something. Like,
really?
It's strange. Like, I have postpartum depression or something. I don't know. Because I get, like, really excited as I'm working through it, and I'll power through something, and then I'm just like, now I don't want to do anything for 6 months. And so it's like having to kind of fight through that slump every time.
Are you frustrated because, like, you think it's not good enough when you finish it, or because you don't have a new project to work on, or?
I think it's the I'm afraid of the blank page. When you finish a project, like, I have to start over. And starting over is the hardest part.
That sounds like a mix of postpartum and empty nest syndrome.
That's so interesting. I wish I had that problem because, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I finished something. Hooray, I'm so happy. And I get excited about a new project. You know, I get to draw something new. But in the middle of that, when you're tired of drawing it, you're like, oh, I don't draw this again.
Are you, what do we got coming up next for Space Mullen? Are you doing, hitting up any conventions? What are your plans?
I'm going to C2E2 in Chicago.
Okay.
And my Dark Horse book is getting announced at a panel there. It's definitely a bucket list for me to be on a panel, so I really hope that that happens. So that'll be really exciting. Space Mullen is going to keep on going. I'm almost done with Chapter 4, and I just actually finished writing my first draft of Chapter 5.
Oh, cool.
Which will be, it's only going to be 22 pages instead of 50, because I'm going to print it, or at least this is the plan, I'm going to print it and sell it at C2E2 as like a mini comic. Just that chapter, because anybody will be able to come on to Chapter 5 and read it and enjoy it for what it is, but while also being like, oh man, how did these people get here? Let's go back to Chapter 1.
Right, that's a really good idea.
You know, and I can sell it for like $5, and I'll try and screen print the cover, which may not happen. This is all very lofty goals. I don't know if it's going to happen.
When does it have to be done by? When is C2E2?
C2E2 is the end of April, so the last weekend of April. So I have some time. But I'm also doing, you know, I've got 22 pages every 6 weeks for Dark Horse. That's pencils and inks. So, I don't know. It all kind of like, kind of have to figure it out. And then again, like, it's like, man, I finished my work day. Now I need to work on my Space Mullet comic. It's okay. It's okay. I love my characters. I love working on them. I just don't want to be too insular, you know? I kind of go stir crazy in the house sometimes.
Tell me, I don't know. I've never heard of this C2E2. What is that?
It's not quite as big as the Wizard World Chicago that happens every year in August in Chicago. But it's the kind of Chicago's up and coming, not up and coming, it's pretty much there. That's downtown Chicago. A lot of really legit creators go. There's been kind of this mass exodus over the past few years from Wizard World show in Chicago. It's kind of become more of like a media guest kind of thing rather than a comic show.
Okay.
And C2E2 is definitely more a comic vibe show. So people, I remember last year, I got to sit behind Rick Remender, and I sat behind Chris Samnee, and like I was like, you know, completely, I was like, hey guys, how's it going? You know? So it's going to be fun. It's a good time, and the crowd there is really great. Like, a lot of people are like looking for new kind of indie creators to get into, and the name like Space Mullet won't completely turn somebody off. People like walk by Space Mullet and they're like, oh, Space Mullet, but I feel like about 50% of the people like don't take me seriously at all.
They
Which is
should.
Okay, because then when they open my book, they'll be like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Well, that's the hope, at least.
How are the covers? They've got to see the work on the cover. I mean, I would open it up from seeing that, despite the ridiculous name.
You know, it's funny. Some people come over because it's like kind of funny and it makes them laugh. And they're like, oh, I'll check this out. You know, this is worth my time. Some people laugh and they just completely ignore it. They just like completely keep walking. And there are some guys, it's funny, you know, the people, and I'm not, you know, throwing stones at comic fans at all. But I've noticed that at shows, people who are in Artist Alley, they will come to go to the creators that they have heard of. And I don't want to say these people, they they don't, so like we're all artists here, and we can like see quality when we walk up to it, you know, like it like slaps us in the face. I don't know if that happens to the general Comic-Con goer. Like I don't want to put everybody into a box, but as a general rule, if like somebody hasn't heard of you, it's harder for them to like come over to your table and engage with you. So it's kind of like a very small fish in a very large pond and making the best of it. But that's great, because for every person that walks away, there's at least two people that come and at least have a conversation with me, which is really special. Like one guy came by, it's like a 50-year-old dude. He literally looked like he was lost. And I was like, hey, man, how's it going? He's like, oh, my God. Hey, do you have any water? No, sorry, man, I don't have any water. He's like, okay, hey, do you draw comics, right? And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I'm trying. And he was like, well, hey, my son's like 15, and all he wants to do is draw comics, so what the heck should I tell him? I don't even know. And I was like, well, does he have a DeviantArt page? He's like, what is that? I don't know what that is.
Wow.
He was actually like a really cool guy, and he was really concerned about his kid. Like, not like my son's bad, but like I want the best for my kid, and it was just really down to earth. We had a really nice conversation. He ended up taking a postcard and signed up for my Space Mullet newsletter.
Awesome.
So, I don't know. Cons are fun. I love talking to grandmas and older guys, too. One thing, I mean, if you're doing a webcomic or anything that's free, you know, and you don't have any printed stuff at your table, one thing that I found really helped is, you know, getting people to sign up for an email list, you know, to get an email when you post a new comic. Like, buying, like, little buttons and giving them a free button if they sign up.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, people sign up like, free buttons? What? Yes, you don't need an email yet? And I'm, like, reading through these emails, and it's, like, you know, all these, like, ridiculous, like, you know, you can totally tell it's just going to their spam inbox. But, you know, it gets people to stop at your table and say hello. So that's always a good thing.
And it gets your name. They hear your name. And
yeah.
They see your stuff. And
yeah.
At some point, it comes back around.
It does.
And they'll be like, hey, wait a second. I saw that guy, and he gave me a free button. Look, here it is.
And it's nice talking to other comic artists like you guys, because, you know, we kind of, like, have the same kind of brain activity when it comes to talking about comics, you know. Like, you guys know the questions to ask. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, okay, where did the inspiration for this come from? Like, what is your process here? And
well, I have to admit, I got to come clean. I have Mark here for a reason. I think I mentioned in the very first podcast that I'm very new to all of this comic industry. I didn't grow up with comic. I lived in Japan for a little bit, so
cool.
I saw it, but I was never really dove into it too much until recently.
Okay.
But I also understand art. Understand writing. You know, so I can cover absolutely the basics of all of this. But when you guys were talking about the certain tools that you're using, I'd never heard of such a thing. And Mark's like, oh yeah, let me write that down. It's awesome though. I love listening to it, because one day I'll be able to ask my own questions like that.
I am always willing and ready to talk about tools. I love my tools.
But I think most artists
are the best.
Have you guys heard of a 10-point divider?
I have not.
No, I have not heard. What is a 10-point divider?
Okay, so it's this thing they use on boats, and then also guys who are like do architecture, they use it as well. So imagine you have this like, it's like a triangle. It's shaped like a triangle, and at the end of the triangle, it has 10 like little 10 metal ridges. And as you can open up this triangle, and all of these ridges come apart, and they're exactly the same they're exactly the same distance apart wherever you pull it. Mm-hmm. So it starts like, you know, when they're really close together, and as you pull this triangle apart, they spread at equal distance. And you can put it down on your paper, and you like bring it and you close it all the way so that they're very close together, and you put a dot where these ridges is, and you flip it over and you open it a little bit so that the ridges spread a little bit, and you put the same you put dots where those ridges are, the new ones. You take a ruler and you match the dots, and you have a perspective grid that's where the vanishing point is, like, way off the page. It's like way off the page.
Whoa. No, I have not heard of that. Up until, like, the perspective thing, I was like, is this a really complicated aims guide? What? Where are you going with this?
Sorry.
What is it, a 10-point grid?
Like, what I used to be doing, especially for doing, like, 3-point perspective, when you're looking down at, like, a room or looking up, like, onto a, like, up to a, something that where, you know, like, technically if you tilt your head down a little bit, you have another vanishing point that's coming towards your feet. And it's usually when you're drawing it on a two-dimensional plane, the vanishing point for that is literally like, it's like a yardstick. You need a yardstick. I used to take my paper, and I used to have a yardstick, and I'd take a little piece of tape if my paper was on the floor, and I'd use a yardstick to set my perspective grid. And now I have a divider that does it for me perfectly. And I can just make dots instead of having to create a vanishing point every time. It's amazing.
What was the name of this thing again?
It's just called like a 10-point divider. And then I remember I start. It's really they're really expensive, but I started with just like a regular little something like calipers, just like calipers that you know you can adjust. It's slower, but you know you just make dots like that. Instead of having something sexy that spreads open and closed, you just make dots, and then you open the calipers a little bit, move them over to the other side of the paper, and you make another set of dots, and it works the same way. And it's about $175 cheaper.
Huh.
So,
packaging.
Anyway, I couldn't help nerding out about that. I just found out about it and got one, and I'm freaking out about it. So.
Do you have one yet?
No. Oh my gosh. If I had $200 to spend on a 10-point divider, I would, but... I'm still using those calipers.
They're definitely not cheap.
It's one of those things I'm going to find in a garage sale someday. I just am convinced of it.
Yeah, someone's not going to have a clue what the heck it is.
Yeah.
Sell it for $2.
Mark, do you mind if I ask what kind of tools you... Are we allowed to talk about this?
Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of years buying a ton of different stuff and wasting a whole lot of, not wasting, but spending a lot of money to experiment. And now okay. I finally like narrowed it down to what I like, which is cheap pencils. I really like these brush pens.
Oh, the Pentels?
Yeah, this one, because you can refill this.
Yep.
With my wife is a nurse, so she got me one of these,
yes.
Which is like a needle filler.
Yep.
So I can just use that with this, which is just like Speedball Super Black.
Okay.
But then I can watercolor over top of it.
Yep.
Like what you were talking about, because I tried it with the default stuff and it doesn't work.
Yeah,
at all.
No way. It bleeds the default Pentel brush pens ink bleeds into paper as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
It like bleeds out not in ideal. The lines. Yeah.
Is that a common frustration for people that use those?
The strange thing is that different inks will react differently on different paper. So you make it an ink that you love yep. that never bleeds on good paper that you use, but then you switch to a different paper and it's awful. And then this awful yep. ink that you used before works perfect for it. You just got to find that pair. But yeah, I used the Winsor Newton brush that you were talking about for years.
Okay.
But it's started to fork. You know, the tines are the...
Dude,
they're splitting, and I've,
I'm
like,
face-palming.
Washed it and conditioned it and done everything. It's just not working for me. So, okay. That and I'm lazy. I like these brush pens. There's no cleanup, you know?
Oh,
you just
totally.
Go with them. So... Yeah.
That's great. Okay, that's awesome.
But yeah, I'm pretty minimal at this point. I just try and kind of keep it down to a small pack, and then...
Yep.
Yeah, I just fold printer paper together and staple it at work. So I get sketchbooks okay. that look like this that are just super quick and easy and dirty to throw together, and then it just
work anywhere.
Mike, how did you do Strongman? What did you use for that?
I used Blue Line stuff. Strathmore Blue Line lined paper, because I hadn't used it before. Yep. I saw it at the art store, and I was like, I'm going to try that.
Is that the smooth paper or the... Smoother?
It's 200.
Yep.
Give me a sec. I'll get the pack.
Now we're getting technical. We're getting into some serious detail now.
Oh, dude, I could talk about this all night. I love it. I love it. Oh, well. It's great. It's so much fun. It's a really fun thing to share.
Yeah, no, this is, it's 200 series. It's their okay. Blue Line stuff.
Okay.
Awesome.
We could do you work on Blue Lines, or do you do all your line work?
I used to work on Blue Line. I used to work on Canson's Blue Line comic paper. Mm-hmm. But then I used to work on Smooth Bristol for a long time, like so the smooth, nice smooth paper you buy. But, you know, I can't stand the way it all feels. Like, I hate the way it feels when I pencil. Mm-hmm. And I pencil and I ink on the same paper, so I just ink right over my pencils. The only time I use Blue Line or, like, blue pencil is when I'm creating a perspective grid. So I'll create a perspective grid with an orange or blue pencil, and then I'll regular HB pencil it over. And I found that using rougher paper is much better for pencil work, and everything comes out looking better, especially in pencils. And then I'm able to build off that better when I move to my inks as well.
Yeah, your inks look really nice with that. You can tell that you're using rougher paper because you get the really nice dry brush effect, yeah. Which is really cool.
And it's great because if you need a smoother line, you just dip your brush in a little bit of water, make sure that you have a little bit of a waterier feel to your brush, and then. Mm-hmm. Start that way, and it's awesome. It's really fun. I can't use microns anymore on my on vellum paper, on the rough paper, because it looks all crappy and feathery.
Because it's so when I'm when it,
no, it's just like, you know, microns, they're nice, but they're only nice if you use smooth paper. So I use a Hunt 102 Crow Quill nib for a lot of like my buildings and things like that. I never pronounce it right, but the gray multiliner fillers that like Stettliner.
Yeah, I've never thought of how to pronounce it. I've got one of those somewhere.
Yeah, they're gray and they work much better because the flow is way better than the microns. Way better. And those work really well. They're much better on vellum than they do than anything else. So that's what I use. And then every once in a while, you know, I keep getting pulled back to the Winsor Newton Series 7 brushes, but then I'll also use Raphael's and I use Escoda's as well. So, yeah.
What's the most consistent? You talked about the Winsor Newton being very inconsistent in build.
Yeah. You know, when you get a good Winsor Newton brush, it will last for a long time, and it will be consistent for months and months and months, and it will be awesome. It's just, you know, basically you need to, like, root out bad brushes from the get-go. So if you ever go to, and this is for every kind of comic artist who wants to use a traditional brush, if you go to an art supply store, go in and you say, hey, I'd like to look at your Winsor Newton brushes or your nice brushes, and ask for a water test for your brushes. So they should bring you out a little cup of water, and you take your brush, and you take the brush that you're looking at, that you're interested in, you kind of swirl it around in the water, make sure that it kind of loses that gluey mm-hmm. feel, make sure it's all nice and loose, and then you take the brush, and you flick it, not super hard, just flick it lightly over your forefinger, and if the brush comes to like a perfect point, it's probably a good brush. Go ahead.
When you say flick it, are you talking about like so that the bristles go over your finger, or just kind of like a toothbrush on the edge of a sink?
Like a toothbrush on the edge of a sink. So you don't want to hit the bristles with your finger. You want like the metal part of the brush, mm-hmm. you know, like so they call it the ferrule. Hit mm-hmm. that over your finger, and all the extra water will kind of flick away. And if the brush forks or looks funny, or if you have like a hair that's like splayed out, like one hair, run away. but if everything looks good, then it's probably a good brush and it's worth your money. I've had a few art supply stores get kind of upset at me for asking, but you know, the brushes cost so much money. I'm like, hey guys, if you're not going to let me try it out, I'm not going to buy it. So,
yeah, I'm going to totally do that because I need to replace mine, but I don't want to get it online.
Oh, don't get it online. Yeah.
No,
and don't be afraid to walk away.
You know, because it's just water. Just be like, guys, that brush is terrible. I think you guys are awesome, but your brushes are bad. It's sad, you know, because I remember, like, Winsor Newton, I've read a lot about them, and they used to be, all of them used to be pristine. And then something happened. I don't know whether they just made too many or that just the quality control went down. And it just, you know, there are a lot of bad eggs out there. And for the, there's, like, I bought a number 4 a few days ago. It was $70, and I had a coupon, so I got it half off, but so much money.
Yeah, they're not cheap at all.
Yeah.
You don't want to spend that kind of money on a brush and get home and it's not working for you.
It's true. So it's definitely the best you can get, but you just have to tread carefully. Because there is no better brush. I mean, it's true. I hate to say it, but it's true. The Winsor Newton Series 7 is the best brush to ink with if you want technical proficiency. But it's
And just, if you, you get a good one.
Yeah, you got to get a good one. You got to get a good one, yeah. It's true.
Well, I like the test, that water test.
Yeah, that's really awesome advice. I'm definitely trying that.
I always have to apologize for seeming super pretentious in the art store. I'm like, sorry guys.
walk in with a cup of water. Well, this is
just apologizing profusely as I'm like flicking every brush in the store.
It'd be bad if you flicked it and then was like, nope, no good, and tossed it over your shoulder.
Yeah.
Okay, nope, we're not working here.
Flick every brush in the store and then just walk out.
Yeah. Yep. Just a pile of brushes on the floor, like littered.
Yeah.
You've got several different, I don't want to say styles here, but from Space Mullet compared to some of the things that you're doing, I guess, I don't want to say contracted out, but asked to do other work, there seems to be a different style. Do you sometimes need space away from one to work on another, or can you finish a panel in Space Mullet and say, okay, now I'm going to jump right into this?
That's a great question. Because when I started art freelancing art in July of 2012, and then I was doing Space Mullet on the side, but it was like completely different from my work that I would get paid for, like storyboarding and things like that. And it's work that I get, like work for hire for like storyboarding or graphic design or any sort of illustration that's apart from my comic work. It's pretty easy to just flick on, because it's like I'm really far removed from that kind of work because I enjoy doing it, but ultimately it's for a paycheck,
right?
And I can step away from it and just knock it out. But as far as comic work is so personal and it's such a part of me that it's much harder for me when making narrative comic work to break styles. At least professionally, you know. So I find that what you see in Space Mullet, as far as comics go, is usually what you get out of me with any other sort of comic. But I've experimented with working in styles with like a spoon nib, like a Japanese wooden handle nib with like Masamune Shirō uses it in Appleseed manga. He's the guy who did Ghost in the Shell as well. Okay. And he would use a spoon nib. And it's really fun to ink with. But it looks messier than brushed and not as pretty.
I can see it being really hard to control.
It is very hard to control, but that control, you know, when you start with it, it's kind of like off-putting because you're like, oh, this isn't looking right. But it kind of has this happy accident feel to it, which is really nice. And it's fun. A lot of times I'll do my warm-ups with that, and then I'll switch to brush or what have you. Just good to switch it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing a romance comic. It's like this sci-fi romance comic anthology that we're kickstarting in a few months, and it's going to be done entirely. It's like 6 pages. It'll be done entirely with that spoon nib. I'm really looking forward to that.
That's going to be cool to see. I love starting a new project with brand new tools just to kind of experiment with something. I was saying earlier, I've really kind of narrowed it down to just a couple things, but that, you know, you tend to get in a rut of doing the exact same things, and
just
bringing something else in can really kind of just explode with what you're doing because it really just shows a lot of lot of stuff you weren't expecting. The happy accidents, which are the best accidents.
Completely. You know, and especially to people who are just starting out, I really like what you guys are doing with making comics, because you're just encouraging people where they're at to just start making comics. Like, and you guys are giving people helpful and like easy, like step by steps, you know, that are helping people, not like, oh, I want to make a comic. Okay, well, maybe tomorrow. It's like, no, make a comic now. Here's some ways to get you started along that. And I think something that's really cool is sometimes people get afraid. They're like, okay, well, I'm just going to use this Sharpie. You know, it's great to try new things and be stretched. And because, you know, like, I know a lot of guys, you know, they've been in comics for a while, and they're like, well, I've never used anything except a Micron, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm like, well, if you tried a brush, you're like, whoa, I don't try that, you know. And people, I don't know if people, like, if you never try something, you know, if you don't try a brush or a dip pen or, you know, I don't know, like one of those Japanese Sumi ink brushes, you know, you never know what's going to happen. One of the best days of my life is when I had this, like, you know, when your desk, when your, like, art desk becomes so junky, like, there's stuff all over your floor, and I kept rolling over a brush. Finally, I got so annoyed, because it was, like, the fifth day, I was like, finally, like, dang it! I pull out this brush, and it was this ratted Sumi ink brush, and I was like, man, this would probably be pretty cool for rocks. So I stamped it in some ink, and I literally made the coolest rocks I've ever made, just That's by awesome. Using this ratty thing that I've been rolling over for almost a week.
You were just talking about people who don't want to try other things. I went through a long period of, or I guess like just my personality when I was growing up, where I would have a natural aptitude for certain things. Like I was always just a little bit better with drawing than yep. other people. But the problem that created for me was that I didn't have to work to be better than the kids around me. But yep. as I grew older and the kids around me were working, I then started to get mediocre and falling behind. And I think people often forget, especially if you start out a little bit better than something, that just because you're bad at something doesn't mean that you won't be good at it. Mm-hmm. And that you just have to put that work into it. And I know that brushes are one of those things that a lot of people like don't want to touch, because the first time you start using it, it is incredibly frustrating.
It is.
Completely changes the visual quality of your work. It does not behave in the way that you want it to, because microns do exactly what you tell them to.
It's true.
But loosening up on that, understanding that I suck at this now, I'm not going to suck at it next year, and yep. just really going through it. And it's really amazing to just kind of sit back and say, you know what, I'm just going to let things happen and see what my style becomes. It's a lot more fun than settling into something and just doing the same thing over and over. That just gets boring. But
I've had a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but I've had quite a few kids come up to me and, you know, at shows and show me their work. And it's really encouraging, you know, because they're so excited about it. You know, it kind of reminds me like what I used to be, you know, when drawing was an escape rather than a job. And it's beautiful. It's still awesome now. I still love it, but it's changed for me. But it kind of gives me a new passion when I see people walking up with their kind of ratty sketchbooks, you know, and they're like, "Hey, will you look at my artwork?" And just like flipping through and just seeing, you know, like you can tell that they're on their artistic journey and they're like trying out new things. But they're like, you can tell like they have some really awesome ideas, like character designs that are just so cool. It's so encouraging to see, and, you know, they're so open to, like, you know, trying out new things. Like, hey, have you thought about using a brush? Your microns are awesome. I can tell you're using a micron here, but, like this character that you've drawn, if you made it with a brush, it might look funny at first, but I think it could be really cool. And it gets them excited, you know, and I don't know. It's so much fun. I just really like what you guys are doing, so keep doing it.
It's fun to see. I mean, like I mentioned, I'm kind of new to all this, so to see even from experience to beginner, you know, just the runs the whole gamut of people visiting this site, and it's kind of mind-blowing a little bit.
That's so awesome. That's so cool. I had never heard of a MOOC until I listened to your guys' podcast. True, I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation yesterday, and it made me think of you guys because So they meet like some... Oh, I was watching Star Trek, First Contact, and the humans from the past are talking like, you guys never work for money? He's like, no. Picard's like, no. We don't work for money. We work to better ourselves. So I was like, making comics.
That's great. All right, well, I guess we can finish up. That way you can have the rest of your evening. Just a couple of things. Where can people find you? I'll list out your websites and everything, but can people find you on Twitter, Facebook, anything?
Let's see. Facebook is facebook.com/spacemullet, one word. Okay. So that's where you can find me on Facebook. My Instagram is Boston... 1987, the place where I post the most artwork and I am the most active is Twitter, which is my handle's at Daniel Warren Art. So Daniel and then my middle name, which is Warren, so WARREN Art, ART. So
awesome, and that's also the name of your website.
And then. DanielWarrenArt.com. And that's kind of it has a little bit of everything. But if they want to read Space Mullet, just Google Space Mullet and you'll find it. I have I don't know if anybody reads Prophet, but I have a backup 5-page comic coming out in Prophet issue 43, which comes out March 19th, which I'm very excited about.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, you have to send over a link to that when that happens.
And
get that out there. So awesome. Well, Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for having me. I was glad to be here. It was really great to meet you.
Oh, it was great to meet you, too. Thanks a lot for all the questions, and thanks for listening to me rattle about Christianity and my faith in comics and all that good stuff.
Do you have any... Actually, let me ask you this. Do you have any inspirational quotes of your own that kind of inspire you to create or anything like that?
Yes. Yes, I do. Okay, this is like super Christian, but whenever I'm really discouraged, I read the last line of Matthew where Jesus says, "I will be with you always, even to the end of the age." That's always very encouraging to hear.
Great.
Awesome. So I don't know. That's really Christian. Oh, and by the way, you, Mark, you asked me. I just wanted to throw this in before we went. You asked me how my parents felt, or how like I was received me drawing comics, you know, with my background.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally want to like plug my parents by saying my parents are completely like super proud of me, even with all the blood and guts that I draw.
That's awesome.
And they've always supported me since the beginning. So I never got to answer that question, but I am still 100% loved and supported. So I wouldn't want people to think that, you know, I'm not supported in that. Anyway, that's the last thing I'll say.
That's awesome to hear. Well, Dan, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on your show, and yeah, man, I hope, don't hesitate to reach out for anything, and if you ever need anybody to write about brushes on your blog, please tell me.
Absolutely.
I'd be happy to anytime. I know I'm kind of inviting myself, but hey, if you need it, let me know.
Every week, my friend, every week is another amazing artist to talk to. And this week was no different. Daniel Warren Johnson. Before I get into that, I just wanted to say a couple of things, because I got some things I really want to talk about regarding our talk with Dan. This one went a little long, as always. You know, that's how we roll. But again, as always, we rolled with more good information. So I'm just going to let it go, you know, and I edit out. I cut out about 10 minutes, so really it went an hour and a half, our conversation at least. Yeah, this one came down to an hour 20, but again, just some really good information in there, and I think you'll agree. So the intro, I had actually recorded that about an hour or so before I sat down and talked to Dan, so I was expecting to do this all on my own, and then about 3 minutes before I reached out to Dan, I heard from Mark Litke, the fantastic and amazing artist and storyteller, as well as MakingComics.com's lead developer, head of development, and he was interested in joining the talk. So I said, hey, the more the merrier. I'm all in. So was he, and we had a great, great talk. All right, let's see. Oh, one other thing. His cat. You know, Mark's got a cat. I have a cat. The purring, the meowing. I am totally leaving that in there. That was that was really funny. I really liked it. I did cut some of it out because there were parts, but for the most part, I had to leave the purring in there. That was just awesome, especially when we were talking about Calvin and Hobbes. I thought that was kind of ironic. But anyway, speaking of the talk, first I want to thank Dan for opening up about the religion aspect. That's kind of a hot topic, and even more importantly, a pretty personal one. So I have tons of respect for Dan for opening up about that. That's definitely not an easy thing to talk about, and I hope that he didn't feel pushed doing it. So, Dan, definitely thank you for talking about that. I personally, as I mentioned, am not a religious person, but I have just a ton of respect for everything that falls in between the extremes. And Dan was a purest definition of level-headedness, and I definitely appreciated that. And I gained a lot from hearing about how he views his religion, and it was a really good to hear all that. It was quite refreshing, actually. All right, so the technical stuff, man, we got in deep, didn't we? I mean, pens, we talked about paper, just all kinds of stuff. So I'm going to link as much in the notes for you to check out. That way you can see all the different tools that we discussed. Sometimes, Mark or Dan were saying, and this one, because we were doing a Google Hangout, so they were showing it to their webcam or the camera, and obviously we can't see it. So I'm going to provide the links for you as well. I'll provide as many as I can. Dan had a quote that actually I thought was really poignant and a pretty good, not a definition of Dan, but I thought it fit him really well, especially when we were talking about the religion and comics. He said, "It's not me making comics about Jesus or me drawing crosses or anything like that, but I want my art to reflect some sort of redemption, something that somebody can pull out of it and can feel and see that it's real, and it comes from an honest place, which I believe that my faith kind of inspires." I don't know, I thought that was a really good quote, and it was Dan, and at the end of our talk, I as I listened to this podcast and I heard that quote, that was Dan. So, Dan, thanks for sitting down with us. I'm really glad we got to do that. So, and I hope you enjoyed yourself. All right, what do we got coming up? I've got some amazing interviews that I am lining up. I've got one, actually, that I'm doing next week that I am ridiculously nervous about, because I can't wait, but I'm totally nervous. So that's gonna be a good one. I'm lining up some really amazing talks with some really great artists. It's gonna be just a really, really good time. If you're wondering where the tweeners are, I'll get to those eventually. Right now, all these people that I get to talk to, I mean, who needs a tweener, right? As always, there's some just amazing articles coming out on the site, makingcomics.com. Definitely check it out. Find us on Facebook. We're always posting there. Find us on Twitter as well, @making_comics, and any other social media that you can think of. I'm sure we're on it. So go find us. All right, Patrick's MOOC, the massive open online course. That's coming up soon. Go to makingcomics.com/MOOC. MOOC, and sign up, register there. It's an open course. There's as many people as we can talk to. Right now we've got a lot of people signed up for that, myself included. So I will be helping out. Devin Larson will be helping out. Devin is another guy on the Making Comics team. So it's going to be a blast, and it starts towards the end of March. So definitely head over to the site, sign up for that, makingcomics.com/MOOC. Well, all right, there is episode number 9. Hope you all enjoyed it. Find me over there on Twitter @SDGreeny, GREENY. I'm always retweeting cool stuff, and I'm always even posting cool stuff myself. Not to toot my own horn, but toot toot. So go check that out, and I think y'all know what's coming up. Be good to people, people. We'll be right back.